about trajectories. Because mm-hmm. it's interesting maybe to know how things maybe evolved or how things were stabilized at some point or mm-hmm. not, and how maybe networks were fragile or not, maybe for reasons of the organization falling out in pieces because people are moving around, or there are not enough users to run a stabilized organization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, this can go into many directions, but I think specifically it would be nice to take a, to hear your about your trajectory of hosting servers for others
mm-hmm.
over the years, and what your experiences. So, what servers were you involved in over the years?
Whether or not connected to the internet.
Yeah.
So that's not a prerequisite.
Mm-hmm. 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 Service.
Services. Networks.
Right. So, I've basically been involved in let's say like two different projects that could be called like services for others, and that developed almost at the same time. A little earlier was the radio project in Graz. Radio Helsinki, which is which is a little. Although I don't know much about it, but I think it's a little like Radio Central here in Antwerp. Yeah, and so this was based like on the community radio idea. So basically, everybody can make his or her own radio show and try to get as many communities involved and stuff like that. And I was active, like both on the administrative and also on the being at like a program host level until about probably 2005 or something like that. And then I decided that other people should take over, especially administrative parts. I do a radio show every once in a while still. So I'm still attached to the project. And
it's still there.
It's still there. It developed quite nicely, actually. It's it has 5 or 6 employees at the moment, so a certain level of professionalization took place, which was which also like liberated a lot of other people to do other stuff too. Mm-hmm. And while that was happening, a friend approached me and told me about like this cool new operating system Linux and how he has been trying to set up a server for the art scene, and he was looking for other people to support him or to help him and to share the workload. And that's how I started getting involved with servers as we know them today, like machines, computers, and Linux. So I've always been interested in computers and computing. And had like over time, every once in a while, access to various machines, like to computer class in high school. But then 1996, 97 was really the time when things started to evolve quickly, and that's when we like set up the first machine that ran moo.at. We rented the domain name. We were looking for something short that was also like capable of representing like the locality. So Mur is the river that runs through Graz, right? That's where it comes from.
Hmm?
No. Somebody said, yeah, it has to be Mur because we're so close. We're so like building walls around everything, and there has always been lots of discussions. Yeah, so but it's Mur actually. So the river. And
which is a network on its
own. Yep, exactly. So the analogy of rivers and networks was taken up by other people too. So once there was a website called neretva.net, I think. Neretva is a river in Serbia, and that was related to the war times on the Balkans and some stories there. And somebody thought about like really creating a network of river domain names and stuff like that. So at the beginning, we were not really so interested in building servers, but we were interested in expanding the network. And our like main or principal target was to connect art spaces to the internet, which in the late 90s was still difficult because like the prevalent technology were modems, and some privileged people had ISDN lines that like I don't know quadrupled the speed of a modem or so. So you were really fast, and then we got in touch with a network from Vienna. And people there were using basically like the precursor of what today is known as ADSL. And that was like, I don't know, six times the speed of an ISDN line. So we could really provide for these days like incredibly fast internet access. And we could bring that to like galleries and art spaces. And that was like.
And what did you do with it in the gallery and the art spaces? Was it to show the projects or was it to do live interaction?
There were many different things. First of all, reset the internet,
which is Michael is doing, and the microphone is falling over.
Rebooted the internet. The one thing was that we encouraged people to host their own servers. And to connect the service to the internet. So some people already used a machine for data exchange on the local level, so you could come with your laptop if you had one, or like all the office machines would use some kind of network files or sharing system. And then we said, okay, you can also connect that to the internet and run your website from basically like, I don't know, the desktop computer that you have sitting on or under your desk. That worked quite well in the late 90s because things were still rather easy, so the network wasn't really that hostile. It became really hostile in later years. And it was also like from like thinking back, the skill level that you had to have was a lot lower than today. It was really easy to set up a web server and serve a site, and there wasn't much that could happen actually. And
from home
actually, home, right? But what we still had to do, or what we always had, we always had like at least one central machine that was used as name server, and also for like the Muerte's own website, and then we had a collection of connected sites. So that was always run on a dedicated machine, and of course we had a mail server. So we had a domain, and then we had email addresses at muer.at, and people started saying, oh, "I also want to have one of these cool email addresses." And this is basically like how the service business started, and then they started hosting their websites on this server. And
did you work with a fee? Like, how did you pay for all of this? Because you have to pay something somewhere, no?
We didn't charge anything from our users and from our members until about three or four years ago. The late 90s was a time when you could get public funding for these projects quite easily because it was also new. And we have a letter of recommendation from one of the back then there was a ministry for culture and arts that doesn't exist anymore. It got like demoted to just like one branch of one of the ministries right now. But back then somebody wrote us a letter of recommendation and said that this is a really, really innovative approach to that, and it has to be given grants from the government. And that was basically like really the kickstart for our project. So yeah, we got for these times back then a lot of money from them. And that meant we could rent a small space and set up shop there, and we could buy equipment and connect the people that needed internet access, And the only thing that we would charge from them was the fee that they had to pay for the wires, like really for the physical connection to Muaté, which was I don't know, very little money. So we could connect people for the equivalent of 25 euros per month or something like that, and provide, like as I said before, really fast internet compared to whatever was available back then.
And your public was artists and that realm, or also outside of that?
At the beginning, it was strictly art. So that was because what was possible was spread by word of mouth, and so it stayed in this community. Later, it got a lot wider. So now we have lots of initiatives from, let's say, like the social field. And then people.
People concerned about ethics.
That was one thing. People concerned about ethics. People concerned about privacy. And we always had a little bit like a back and forth also. So people started, for example, on our server, hosting their mail services there for like their small offices or their small crew. And then at one point they decided, now we switch all that to Google. Then they did that, and then like 3 years later they came back and said, we want to get back away from Google. We had people asking, is it possible to get like an email address for our children? And that was a new challenge, because we had to find like some kind of legal grounds. How do you give an email address to children? So, okay, if the parents say yes, and if the parents take responsibility, that can happen. Because they said, oh, yeah, this is so cool. You have a web interface for your email client that doesn't have any kind of advertisement on. And people were so used to all these public services, and you get, like, I don't know, bombarded with advertisement from different things, and they didn't want their kids to have that. So so that happened. And of course, other people, too, they said, oh, yeah, I want that because I'm personally tired of advertising all the time, or I'm tired of having Google read my email and make suggestions based on what I write or receive.
And what is the status of Moore.org today?
The status today is we have a stable membership base that is like a little above 300 members. And so the members really range from individuals that host maybe a little website and do their email business, up to larger organizations that have a couple of people really like working for them and a lot of members. So we have some organizations that have like, I don't know, 60-70 user accounts. So overall, we have probably around 1,000 active users that do various things on the server. What became quite popular is any kind of like data sharing via the cloud system. So we have an active Nextcloud running. That's popular, but email is still, I mean, you can't kill email, and email is one of the really crucial systems. So if the mail server is down for maintenance or because something went wrong, then people start to complain really fast, or complain or ask what's going on and when is it up again.
And is it you they call, or is it distributed?
Yeah, that's kind of difficult because we're still... It's still a little like family-like, so we know most of the people personally. And
most of the people
that are users.
Users, okay.
Yeah, most of them. And not all of them, but most of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have to go.
But I can continue.
So usually we Usually we urge people to call call the office, so we have an office phone number, or we say that write an email. We have like a we have a ticketing system that keeps track of all kinds of interactions and stuff. But since we know a lot of them, and we also have like a lot of them are friends or distant friends, whatever. So they might call my mobile phone, and they might call on weekends because it's just urgent for them now, or they might call some colleagues telephone and ask what's going on. So it's really we're not that strict in terms of where to call, but I prefer if people take the official way, because I also want to have some time off.
And when thinking about like coming up years and thinking about the resilience of the network. So
what,
the resilience of the network.
Yep.
So how to how to continue from here? Are there any ideas that or conversations going on within the organization related to that subject?
Yeah. There's actually that. There are very few active members, active in terms of like thinking about how to go on, how to evolve the network, and there are very different opinions too. I personally think that it's still important to own hardware and to host things on your own hardware and not trust like the cloud. So in my opinion, it's important to go on with this kind of like tiny, highly specialized ISP and to stay or try to stay like on top of modern technology. So like, for example, when we started, we had one web server and that served like all websites, and that's from security and privacy standpoints, that's not really such a good idea anymore. So we started using containerized versions of these applications more and more, and we're still in the process of moving to the containerized like version of web servers. So there's still not everything there. And that's of course like another challenge, because sometimes you have to upgrade the software that runs the website. There are like tons of old PHP scripts around, and they all need to be modernized somehow to run on more modern software. But that's one thing that we're trying to enforce more and more, like really like compartmentalize and put stuff into containers.
So that speaks about, oh, there we go. One more question. All right.
Okay.
last question. Thinking about resilience again, but maybe on the financial side, are there any strategies or thoughts about relating to the users in terms of having a certain amount of users in order to also stabilize and making the organization financially possible? Or are there still funds coming from other sources, like the city or the the state? Or
so currently, about 80% of our budget, and our budget is around 130,000 euros a year. And about 80% of that come from government bodies. So we get financed by the we get grants from the city of Graz and from the regional government of Styria. And we also get like some money, but that's like the smallest amount from the federal government of Austria. 3 years ago, we started a program called Solidarity Membership Fee, which, like the idea we took from community supported agriculture programs, basically mostly in Latin America. And the idea behind it is that we give a fixed budget. So we say that, for example, for this year, we said we want 21,000 euro from our user base. And everybody is invited to make a pledge for the amount that he or she or they can and want to pay. And we say, but we also accept from people who don't have any money or don't want to pay, we accept an amount of 0 euro, but you have to make a pledge and say, okay, 0 is my bid, and that's accepted. And that works quite well, actually, because like from what I can see and from what I hear from people is that everybody really like pays as much as he, she, or they wants. And I think this has potential to become a model for also like a bigger association and a user base of maybe like, I don't know, 1,500 or 2,000 users or members could be able to sustain a network with like a basic set of employees. Like, you have your basic staff that takes care of administration and like technical support, and that could be self-sustained by the membership fees. But it needs more than 300 members. 300 is too small a number.
This means also sustaining itself without governmental support.
Right, that would work. So then we could really say that that could be a self-sustained Libre hosting server, for example, or Libre hosting small internet service provider. And the art part could be part of this association that could still be funded by governments, but then we could use all this the funding money exclusively for artistic production, for example, which would also be nice.
To make a differentiation between different usages of the
mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. Thanks a lot.
Sure,
this
we'll
last
see how
minute,
it turns out.
Last minute
last
recording.
Minute interview.
I'm going to stop it now.